A couple of Monday nights ago, Lex rang me, put on his most mysterious voice. Do you want to see something that will make you happy? Do you want to see something that's beautiful? Then go outside and look up into the sky. And when I did, I saw what has been known as the happy face. Jupiter and Venus and the moon, just there. When I saw that, I was really excited. I was extra excited because I would have missed it if it hadn't been for Lex's phone calls. That made it even a little bit more special. You know, even though I was excited to see that, I very much doubt that I was anywhere near as excited as the wise men were when they first looked up into the sky and they saw that just beautiful star. And they began to understand what it would mean. You know, the story of the wise men is one of the stories, I think, in the Bible that is really shrouded in mystery. We don't know how many of them there were. We guessed three because there were three gifts. But the Bible actually doesn't tell us how many. We don't know what happened to them. We know that after the dream, they went back to their own country. Hear no more of them. You know, we can't even be sure what that star was. See, the word star in the Greek refers not just to a star, but in fact refers to any luminous body that's in the heavens. So it could be a star, it could be a comet, it could be a planet. Some even suggest that it was the Shekinah. You know the Old Testament term? The glorious pillar of light that led the Israelites in the wilderness. I don't know if any of you have heard or remember the singer Christy Berg. I love his song Woman in Red. He released a song at Christmas in the 80s called A Spaceman Came Travelling. And in that song, he actually declares that the star was in fact a spaceship that settled over the stable in Bethlehem, and that it was a spaceman who got out of the spaceship, an alien spaceman, and came down and said to Mary and Joseph and the little child, "Good news on earth." I think he got that one wrong. But in the end, it is not the star itself that is important. The star was just a part of what God used to get those wise men on the journey in the first place. And I say a part of it, because I'm convinced that there were other motivational forces that made them pursue what was a very long, a very arduous, dangerous, and probably extremely expensive journey. A motivational force associated with who they were and where they came from. You see, Matthew tells us this. He says they were wise men, and he uses the word magi, whatever. Wise men from the east. In the Roman Empire at that time, the east was understood as Persia. Persia, which had long been a thorn in the flesh of the Romans. He calls them magi. And it's a Greek word, but it's derived from a Babylonian origin. It's a word that simply meant an oriental scientist, a wise man, an astrologer, or a seer, which of course is another name for a prophet. What is interesting to note is that this Babylonian word would have been the one used to describe Daniel and his friends Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Do you remember them? They were the young Jewish boys who, when the Babylonian Empire came in to overtake Jerusalem, before the great exile took place, they took these men and they took them back to Babylon to train them up to be what? To be wise men. To be magi in the kingdom of Babylonia. So that's how they were addressed. Now, later on, of course, Babylon was conquered itself by Persia. And the interesting thing is that Daniel went from Babylon and he was accepted into the Persian society. I think it's quite a miracle, actually, that they conquered his country, but they took this Jew, Daniel, and they made him one of the top three in the land. He was very, very important in Persia. Also, at the same time, as well as absorbing Daniel into their particular kingdom, they absorbed this term into the Persian language. Now, the reason I mention that is because many of Daniel's prophecies that you find in the book of Daniel were given in the Persian period. Some Babylonian period, but mainly in the Persian period. And because Daniel was so revered in that society as a wise man, these writings would have been passed down through the generations of Persian wise men. And they would have included one passage in the whole of the Bible that foretells the time of the Messiah's coming. Doesn't just foretell his coming, but actually gives a time frame for his coming. And that's Daniel 9:24-26, and we'll look at that a little later. But also, as well as that, in the Persian society, Persian culture, they also remembered another Mesopotamian prophet whose name was Balaam. You remember Balaam and the donkey, the talking donkey? Well, Balaam's writings were also observed into the Persian religions. And he made a prophecy that they knew. He prophesied this about that same Messiah who came, who was to come. And he said this in Numbers 24:17. Now, Balaam was not a Jew. He was a Gentile. He had many gods on his clientele. And as a prophet, he could say this about the Lord as well. And this is what he said to the Israelites. He didn't really want to bless them, but he did, because of the donkey and a few other things. But this is what he said. I see him now. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel. This is generations, way before Jesus was born. So it may well have been that these wise men were men from Persia who had access to both these writings. And when they saw the unusual star in the sky, they went through their books and thought, who wrote about a star? Balaam did. And then they made a connection with what Balaam said and what Daniel wrote, because they realized that they had moved into that general time frame that Daniel spoke about. So putting the two together, they set out expecting to see the Jewish Messiah, this anointed deliverer, not just any old king. They expected to see this one that had been written about for centuries, that the time had come for him to be born. Now, the really exciting thing about this for us who live today, however, comes out of that prophecy from Daniel in Daniel 9:24-26. It was a prophecy that was a part of a vision that came to Daniel when he was in prayer. What's interesting, it was brought by a very well-known Christmas angel. Look at Daniel chapter 9, verse 20. While I was speaking and praying, confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel, and making my request to the Lord my God for his holy hill for Jerusalem, while I was still in prayer, Gabriel, the man I'd seen in the earlier vision, came to me in swift flight. Good wings on that angel, I'd imagine. About the time of the evening sacrifice. Remember Gabriel? Peter, Mary, a little bit later on. Well, actually, some centuries later on. Now, the vision that Gabriel gave to Daniel included this prophecy in verses 24-25 of that chapter. And this is where it gets a little bit complicated, so stay with me. 77s are decreed for your people and your holy city to finish transgressions, to put an end to sin, to atone for wickedness, to bring in everlasting righteousness. Does it sound like the cross of Calvary to you? to seal up vision and prophecy, i.e. they would be finished, and to anoint the most holy. Know and understand this. From the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the anointed one, the ruler, comes, there will be 7 sevens and 62 sevens. Let me tell you, this prophecy is a celestial timeline. It's talking about things heavenly which relate very much to earth. Something happening that's been decreed above, happening below. It's an earthly period of time. 77 was originally written as 70 weeks. In other words, 70 weeks of years. So, 7 days in a week, 70 times 7 years. 480 years. That must pass before God does something which is going to be amazing. That is still to happen. But it comes, this 70 times 7 year span, with a beginning time that is an actual date in history. Now, somewhere on here, if you look, see there, know and understand this, from the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. That is the beginning part. That's the date. And we know from the book of Nehemiah when that was. The book of Nehemiah tells us that this decree to rebuild Jerusalem was issued during the 20th year of Artaxerxes' accession to the throne. That's great. The Encyclopedia Britannica, I'm told, sets the date as March the 14th, 445 BC. So you've got a starting date. That's pretty good. The prophecy also tells us that this time period of 490 years will include an initial period of 7 times 7. So if you look down the bottom here, there will be 7 sevens. That's the initial period. Later on in that chapter, Daniel tells us that those 77 or 49 years when the city will be rebuilt and will be a time of trouble. Remember when Nehemiah started building the walls? He had a trowel in one hand and a sword, right, in the other. And that trouble just actually continued for quite a time in that period as then not just the walls but the rest of the city was built. And then after that 49 years, there will be a further 62, and you see it there again, and 62 sevens. There will be another 62 times 7 years before the anointed comes. Or 434 years. You know what that word anointed means in Hebrew? Messiah. And you know what it means in Greek? Christ. So, if we move on a little bit here. Oops, that's wrong one to press. Let's try that one. In this celestial timeline, we have a starting date, 445 BC. Then we've got a period of 49 years when the wall was built and the city was built, taking us to 396 BC. Then a period of 434 years, which takes us, because we're working backwards, remember, to 38 AD, or AD 38. That will be the time, according to Daniel 7, verse 26, when the anointed one will be cut off. Daniel wrote this: after the 62 sevens, the anointed one, the Messiah, will be cut off and will have nothing. Now, cut off here is a reference to a decision of the authorities in that day to cut short his life, to kill him. Of course, we think about the crucifixion straight away. But even before the crucifixion, a decision was made to destroy Jesus and was firmed up. Now, the interesting thing about all this is that when we look at that, and we look at that last figure, 38 AD, we say, oh, well, that's okay, but we know that Jesus was dead by 38 AD. He was born about, well, say, BC 4 or BC 3. They got the figures wrong later on. That's another story. And then he lived for 30, 33, 34 years and was crucified, probably about AD 32. Well, the interesting thing is that the biblical year, according to Genesis, was a set 360 days. And there's a biblical student whose name is Sir Robert Anderson, an old, well, I think he's dead now, but very, very important man in his time. He looked at those 69 times 7 years, or 483 years, and he turned them into days, at 360 days per year. And then, beginning with March the 14th, 445 BC, he added those days to it. And he came up with a date, Sunday, April the 6th, 32 AD, by our reckoning, which just happened to be the very day that Jesus rode into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday. The day that Luke tells us that the Jewish authorities plotted his death, said he must die. That's the day that Gabriel had told Daniel many centuries before that the Anointed One would be cut off. Now, what all that tells me, as I look at that, is that those wise men travelled to worship was not just a little boy living in a tiny village in a small conquered nation who will grow up one day to be a good teacher. He was the one anointed to free the world of sin, of suffering, and of evil. And you know that the star that they followed was nothing compared to him who is the star that has come out of Jacob, the Lord Jesus Christ himself. You know, indeed, Jesus said of himself in Revelation 22:16, he said, "I am the bright morning star." You know what the morning star does? That's the star that heralds the change from the darkness of night into the joy of day. That's what Jesus, the light of the world, came to do, isn't it? He comes to take the darkness and take it away that we might have light. He comes to our lonely, to our empty, to our grief-stricken, guilt-ridden hearts and brings to us the transforming light of his presence. That's what he offers to do. That's what Christ came into the world to do, to bring light that will overcome darkness. You know, even the darkness that still remains once we become a Christian, the Lord promises that that will go, take away by his power and his presence. That one day when he returns in glory, at the end of the period that Daniel spoke about, then the whole world will see that light of his presence. You know, we're on a journey, and that's what the choir is going to come and sing us about in a moment. On our journey through life, there's only one star worth following. That's not the happy face one, but it's the Lord Jesus Christ who said, "Come, follow me, and I, not you, but I, will make you my disciples."